Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we are following this historic morning at the Supreme Court. The court has struck down the essence, it looks like, of the Defense of Marriage Act. And again, these two decisions on gay marriage are just coming out, and we're reading them for detail and how sweeping they are. But they seem to have struck down both the Defense of Marriage Act and Proposition 8, which bans gay marriage in California. On the Defense of Marriage Act, basically they say the federal government can't deny federal benefits to couples who are legally married in states like New York that have legal gay marriage. So that is a big win for people who are already legally gay married here and elsewhere. On Prop 8, here's the bottom line as far as we can tell so far. California would join the states with same-sex marriage, and with the striking down of DOMA, the federal government would recognize same-sex marriages in California as well as the other states. The decision of the Ninth Circuit, the lower court, is vacated and remanded in the Prop 8 case. This means that gay marriage is legal once again in California. The lineup is 5-4, and when we get some guests on, and we'll be talking about this basically from now through the rest of the show, when we get some guests on who can really dig into the details of who said what, this dissenting coalition is really going to be interesting. It is Justice Kennedy, Thomas, Alito, and Sotomayor. So we're trying to determine why. We're trying to determine how sweeping a measure this is and if it means that this will simply once again go back to the courts to be decided again in California and gay marriage is legal in the meantime, or if this even has implications for other states. The most sweeping possible thing that they could do is say there is some kind of basic right implied by the Constitution to marry the person of your choice. And in that case, all 37 states with laws banning gay marriage would have them overturned by this decision. I don't think they're going there. They could do that, but I don't think that they are going there. So Politico is now reporting that they declined to rule on the merits of Proposition 8. So there may be a technical ruling here that has to do with who has standing. Even before the court, it could be that technical. That's one of the scenarios. If the California State Attorney General and the governor were not defending Prop 8, could other people actually bring it to the Supreme Court and get a ruling on it? So it could be on that narrow a ground. And as I say, we will continue to give you the real information, the details as they come out and as we know them better. So we're going to do another combined conversation here with a guest who can talk about the political reaction in Washington to the gay marriage law, but also some other things that are going on. And that's Jonathan Chait, columnist at New York Magazine, who used to work for the New Republic. We'll talk about that and President Obama's ambitious plan to deal with climate change that he announced yesterday. Jonathan, welcome back to WNYC on this historic morning. Hello.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, there's so much going on these days. It's just hard to focus on anything. There's just a huge amount of news coming out.
If these were supposed to be the dog days of summer for slow news, who let the dogs out, right?
Yeah. If you're trying to get me to sing, you're not going to succeed.
We're not, and we're glad that you're not going to sing. We're very relieved, actually. But Jonathan, any quick reaction as D.C. can react to it on DOMA? It looks like, you know, the D.C. portion of this, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, passed in the 1990s, signed by President Clinton, is now invalidated at the hands of the Roberts Court.
Yeah, I don't have any expertise on this. I don't know if I have anything profound to say. I think a lot of us just have to sit back and be stunned at how rapidly the whole political climate around this question changed. People thought it would be a generation or generations of work, but it wasn't. And I think the reason is that the argument for gay marriage is just so intuitive. There is almost literally no rational response. People who were against it never came up with any kind of compelling reason. They could never answer the question, who would be harmed by letting two gay people who are in love with each other marry each other? They never came up with any remotely plausible answer to that question. And public opinion just swept along, basically, as people thought of it. Huge numbers of them, I think very correctly, decided no one will be harmed, so why are we against it? And I think pretty much that's what jurists thought, that's what people thought, that's what society almost as a whole thought.
So you don't expect a coalition of Republicans to rise up in Congress and say, we have to restore some version of the Defense of Marriage Act that might pass constitutional muster. I'm thinking of this Gang of Five, for example, that's still trying to block the immigration bill, mostly from the Deep South, after this troop surge at the border provision allowed it to pass with 67 votes the other night. But Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Vitter from Louisiana, Inhofe from Oklahoma, and some of the others, are they going to try to mount this as an issue again and try to come back around in Congress? Or are they going to give lip service to tisk, 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 look what the court is doing to our values and our morals, or even that?
No. I think lip service at best. But the truth is that Republican elites never cared about this very much at all, right? President Bush used the issue to help win in Ohio and other areas in 2004. And then social conservatives said, okay, now this is our chance. Let's make a big push on gay marriage when Bush won a second term, and he just dropped it, forgot about it. It was something he used to win elections, but it wasn't anything they actually really cared about. And I think since then, not only have they come to care about it less, but many of them actually are for gay marriage, I think, secretly or even increasingly openly. So they have no desire to do this. I think they feel like they need to respect the needs of those portions of their base that still care about this. But that's a shrinking portion that they're going to have no matter what. They basically don't need to give them very much.
Here's some more on Prop 8. From the very reliable blog, SCOTUS blog, which follows the Supreme Court, there Amy Howe writing, here's a plain English take on Hollingsworth v. Perry, the challenge to the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8, which bans same-sex marriage. She writes, after the two same-sex couples filed their challenge to Prop 8 in federal court in California, the California government officials, who would normally have defended the law in court, declined to do so. So the proponents of Prop 8 stepped in to defend the law, their private sector proponents, and the California Supreme Court, in response to a request by the lower court, ruled that they could do so under state law. But today the Supreme Court held that the proponents do not have the legal right to defend the law in court. As a result, it held the decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, the Intermediate Appellate Court, has no legal force, and it sent the case back to that court with instructions for it to dismiss the case, unquote from SCOTUS blog. So, Jonathan, it's kind of what I was saying before. It's that very narrow ground that because the governor and the state attorney general on behalf of the state declined to defend the Prop 8 referendum results, that the plaintiffs in the case actually didn't have standing.
Right, well.
That's as narrow a ruling, I think, as they could possibly make. That's my first reaction to it. Without ruling on the merits of Proposition 8, can any state have a referendum that bans gay marriage under the U.S. Constitution? Apparently, they took no position on that.
You know what?
You're going to defer.
Out of my expertise, I need, you know, this is, I need to read up on this real-time decision before
yes.
I tell you one way or the other.
Right. And listeners, if you want to react to what you're hearing, we can start taking phone calls, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, based on the Supreme Court rulings as we are relating them to you on both the Defense of Marriage Act and Proposition 8, 212-433-9692. And for our guest, the political writer for New York Magazine, Jonathan Chait. So, Jonathan, on the climate change.
Yeah.
This is this kind of goes back to a Supreme Court ruling, too. Since we're all obsessed with the Supreme Court today,
right.
Maybe I should ask you about that by remembering that the same Roberts Court allowed President Obama, through the EPA, to regulate carbon as a pollutant, even though it's not the kind of air pollutant that we breathe in that affects our lungs, what we normally think of as pollution. And that allowed him, I guess, to issue executive orders having to do with global warming yesterday. Is that correct?
Well, it didn't allow him. It required him. And this is something that's been lost in the debate. They issued this ruling when President Bush was still president, requiring the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate greenhouse gases as a pollutant. And President Bush refused. And what they did was the EPA sent an endangerment finding to the White House, and the White House refused to open the email, which was their way of avoiding having any action. So Obama is merely complying with an actual requirement under the Clean Air Act. But, you know, there's a certain amount of leeway the president gets as to when they do the ruling and, you know, how they do it. So Obama was basically first attempting to find a legislative workaround, right? That was what trying to pass the cap and trade bill was all about during the first 2 years. But they couldn't get it passed. So this is the backup plan, is to go back to the legal authority that they can and actually must use to regulate greenhouse gases through the EPA.
So
that's what he's saying he's going to do.
So besides the actual announcement of what the president plans to do to cut greenhouse gas emissions, it's that since Congress is so hopelessly gridlocked, the president decided to exercise his executive power to make that happen. Can he really have an impact?
Yes, he can really have an impact. Now, he announced basically a lot of specific little things he's going to do to reduce greenhouse gases, and they're all like mostly little nickel and dime things that collectively add up to a decent chunk. It's like, you know, having more green energy sources on federal land and small things like that. But the big one he hasn't yet specified, but he's just promised to do it. And the big one is regulating existing power plants. They've already started a process to regulate new power plants. So basically the rule is new power plants have to have a standard of emissions that basically makes it impossible to build a new coal plant. But we've still got a lot of coal plants out there running. They've been running for a long time, and some of them are very, very dirty. So this rule is going to affect the fleet of existing power plants, and that accounts for 40% of all the greenhouse gas emissions in this country.
And that is a fact worth lingering on.
Right.
Coal plants account for 40% of all the greenhouse gas emissions in this country. That is such an overwhelming percentage for any single source.
Right.
That if they can do something about that, I guess it really can make a dent. Now, of course, the coal industry is jumping up and down and saying, this is going to put us out of business, or this is going to increase everybody's electricity rates because it's very expensive to retrofit all these old plants with the carbon-reducing state-of-the-art equipment that the president would presumably require here.
Right.
True, or are they crying wolf?
Well, no. It's true that it's going to put them out of business. I mean, you have to put them out of business. I mean, pretty much. You don't have to eliminate all coal in this country, but you have to basically have a war on coal. And you have to significantly decrease the amount of coal you burn over the next decade, and over the next 40, 50 years, you pretty much have to phase it out. You got to get off coal, and the coal plants are right to feel a threat. Now, they're wrong that it's going to significantly increase people's electricity. The plan is announced. We can't have a measurement as to what the effect will be, but it's not that hard to do. Natural gas has gotten really cheap. It's not cheaper than coal everywhere, but it's not that far away. So it wouldn't take that much to push people onto gas or other sources of electricity that aren't super expensive.
And so that, of course, gets into the whole fracking debate. But is there enough natural gas to go around with the current fracking laws that would allow the country to basically replace all the coal-fired power plants?
Well, you don't have to replace all the coal-fired power plants right away. Over the long run, you do. But over the long run, you have a lot of options for how you generate your stationary electricity. The best proxy we have for what Obama is going to do is a plan that was developed by the Natural Resources Defense Council. They came out with this plan right after the election. And this was basically like a regulatory framework that would go to every state and give every state a target for how much it has to reduce its power plant emissions, its existing power plant emissions. And it gave them a lot of flexibility, right? So, and it would be based on how much they currently emit. So some states are really heavy coal, all coal, and they wouldn't have to shut down all their coal plants, but they would have to reduce some. And you could do some by switching to other sources like gas or renewables. And some of them you could, you know, there's a lot of money lying on the ground, as it were, by just conservation measures, right? I mean, you know, a lot of houses that could be retrofitted to become more energy efficient. There's a lot of ways to save on energy costs without even switching your power sources. So they could get some of their savings in emissions that way too. So that's the kind of the outline that people are expecting Obama to work off of. Now, whether he uses that exact version or he may do a compromise version, but that's kind of the basic framework. Now, I think that's the plan to get. You have two timetables you have to go on to basically meet our climate challenges. The first timetable is 2020. That's a big year, because the United States promised at the Copenhagen summit that by 2020 we would reduce our greenhouse gases by a certain amount, by 17%. And if we can hit that target, if we can credibly put in a plan that says we're going to hit that target, then we can negotiate an international treaty. Right. Because if we've met our obligations, we can go to India, China, all the other countries and say, okay, we're doing it. Right. Now, you know, you make a treaty, you reduce your emissions too, and we put in a treaty for the whole planet.
We're going to go to coverage of the Supreme Court rulings here in just a minute, as they are striking down both the Defense of Marriage Act and California's Proposition 8 this morning. But before you go, Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine, Republicans are crying dictator about these executive orders. Like, the president bypassing Congress is a power grab rather than an exercise of the rights of the executive under the Constitution. And a war on coal, as you just acknowledged it should be, that's the accusation that the coal industry and the Republicans make. The goal of basically putting the coal industry out of business, as you just analyzed what this is and in your opinion should be, do they have a point that this is such a big thing for the country that it's something the president shouldn't do by himself?
Well, they should do it. I mean, they've been invited to do it. First of all, like I said, the president's required to exercise this power by the Supreme Court. Now, he tried to give the power back to Congress in 2009 to 2010. They wouldn't take it. They wouldn't do it. He again said at the beginning of his term, you in his State of the Union address, you pass a bill and I'll give up this power. There's no interest. So, you know, I don't see how it's a power grab. It's using the power that they are not only allowed to but required to use by the Supreme Court.
All right. Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine, thanks a lot for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Big day on the climate change front, as well as the gay marriage front, the affirmative action front, the voting rights front. What a week it has been in the United States for important issues that affect all our lives. And if you're just joining us, maybe you haven't heard yet, both the Defense of Marriage Act and Proposition 8 in California have been struck down by the Supreme Court, but this does not legalize gay marriage nationwide. On DOMA, the court said legally married same-sex couples should get the same federal benefits as heterosexual couples. The court invalidated a provision of the Defense of Marriage Act that has prevented married gay couples from receiving those various tax and health and retirement benefits that are generally available to married people. The vote was 5-4. So if you're a legally gay married person in New York or another state that has it, you can now get all those federal married people's benefits. So we're still looking for more details of that to see how far that actually goes. And the court has cleared the way for same-sex marriage in California by holding that the defenders of California's gay marriage ban, Proposition 8, did not have the right to appeal lower court rulings striking down the ban. That's more of a technical ruling, also a 5-4 vote. and leaves in place the initial trial court declaration that the ban is unconstitutional. So that's a lot of triple negatives there. But basically, a California court ruled that the referendum that banned gay marriage in that state was unconstitutional. The state would not defend it. The governor, the attorney general, would not defend Prop 8. So private proponents of the law went to court to try to have the law reinstated. They succeeded, but the Supreme Court has basically ruled that they don't have standing. So we'll get our first reaction here from some of you on the phones. Tara in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thanks for being patient. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Go ahead. What do you want to say?
I just wanted to say I'm super thrilled about the DOMA ruling. A lot of people still don't really realize that DOMA applied to immigration benefits. And so my partner and I have been waiting about 8 years for something to change with DOMA so that we can sponsor her for a green card to stay here in the U.S.
Is it clear to you that you would then be eligible, you and she, for the immigration benefits that that married people get? Is that clear to you already from what you've heard? Because I'll ask one of our guests coming up.
Yeah, I think it's fairly clear. We're not married in New York State now, but that's mainly because we haven't wanted to jeopardize her status here, because anytime she comes into the country, if they knew that she had a spouse here, it would jeopardize her ability to enter. So we're pretty sure that if DOMA was struck down under the language that we got,
yes,
that if we were to marry in New York State, we'd be able to sponsor her for a green card in the future.
Well, congratulations, Tara. Probably
thank
an
you.
Order for you. Thank you for calling. And yes, my producer is telling me that regarding that amendment that some of you know was in the immigration bill about same-sex couples, kind of excluding them from that bill, we're reading that this Supreme Court ruling makes that amendment moot. So that would mean married gay couples would be eligible for immigration benefits that accrue to married people as well as the other federal benefits. We have Michael Lavers from the Washington Blade joining us. Michael, we just have 30 seconds before we have to take a break. But so on that point, is that your understanding? Did you hear the question with respect to immigration benefits accruing to married gay people under DOMA now?
I did, and folks with whom I was speaking outside the Supreme Court earlier before the justice came down with their DOMA decision seemed to feel the same way. There was a lot of folks were extremely excited, to say the least, when the decision came down about half an hour ago.
All right, and we have to leave it there for now because we're up against a break, and we will continue with our coverage of the Supreme Court's gay marriage rulings. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.